The Geek Cave, brought to you by BuzzTime. Great minds drink alike. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, O searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the movie edition of the Geek Cave podcast. Thanks for downloading it. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad.
I've learned my lesson, and I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
Okay, cool. So,
this will be a nice segment.
So, Suicide Squad, which got mixed reviews here in the cave, is now officially an Oscar-nominated film, receiving the nod for Best Makeup and Hairstyling. So, it will compete alongside a movie called A Man Called Ove, which is, I think, Swedish or Swiss, about an old guy, old cranky guy in a neighborhood, and Star Trek Beyond, which is about destroying the Enterprise, I think. That's what the rest of them have been about.
Oh, well.
Now, I was uneducated about the best, you know, makeup and hairstyling as an Oscar-nominated thing. And it turns out that what they do is they get, in this case, they had seven potential nominees: Man Called Ove, Star Trek Beyond, Suicide Squad, Deadpool, Hail Caesar, another one that got mixed reviews, The Dressmaker, and Florence Foster Jenkins were the seven movies. And to pick who's going to actually have the nomination, the kind of director, art director for these things, goes in front of a group with, and for 10 minutes with a reel, kind of talks about, here's what we did, here's what we had to do in order to make, you know, to do these effects and to have this, these characters pop. And so I used to think it was just about, you know, hair and makeup, you know, just straight up, here's how we make a person look human and look like they have the right color, etc. No, it's pretty much, how do we make sure that the tattoos on Diablo from Suicide Squad are the exact same in every shot? Or how do we make sure that Deadshot's beard hair is the same length over the entire shooting schedule? Because the movie takes place over a very short amount of time. And so with that in mind, and seeing Killer Croc and Diablo and the makeup, kind of the smudged makeup look that they had on Margot Robbie, it's like, okay, I get it. I get why that would require an intense amount of detail, an intense amount of attention to make that work. So I get it, and I'm okay in that realm being able to say, yeah, all right, this is the now Oscar-nominated film Suicide Squad. Now, surprising to, well, to most comic book nerds, is the only other comic book movie to be nominated on the Oscars was Doctor Strange for visual effects. If you don't understand why that got a nod, go watch Doctor Strange again. I mean, to take something that was kind of ridiculous and make it look as realistic as they did is kind of magical.
You probably missed something along the way.
Yes. But nothing from Captain America, nothing from, anything, nothing from Deadpool.
Which is sad. I really wanted Ryan Reynolds to give his, you know, up yours acceptance speech for something Deadpool would win.
So, but other nominations, Star Wars Rogue One got a nod for visual effects and sound mixing. Fantastic Beasts got a nod for production design and costume design. But the one that surprised me, and it flew completely under my radar until it was already kind of out of theaters again by me, is La La Land, which is a musical that is now tied with the Titanic and the 1950 film All About Eve for most nominations at 14.
Holy crap.
That was a surprise. I honestly, like I said, it flew completely under my radar. I'd not seen any news about it. It wasn't like in 97 when Titanic was in the theater and we heard about people going over and over again, you know, 2-3 times to see this movie. It just wasn't there. The other surprise was that Pixar did not get the animated feature nomination for Finding Dory. It got a short, you know, a nomination for the short Piper, but it didn't get an animated. Zootopia beat it.
Huh.
As the other one. Now, I haven't seen Zootopia yet. I did see Moana. I think that Moana was well done, and depending, I don't know exactly what they look for in animated.
Zootopia, you know, is good.
I'm sure it is. I've heard lots of good things about it. It's on my Netflix queue. I just haven't watched it yet. I'm also kind of pulling for Kubo and the Two Strings just because I really like the Laika Studios. They're the ones who did Coraline and Paranorman.
Yeah, I've
and
yet
Box
to
Souls.
See that one, but it's on my list. I really do.
Kubo
want,
and the Two Strings?
Yes, I really do want to see that.
I have that as well.
Then I would like to borrow that when I borrow Darksiders.
Absolutely. It'll take you a lot less time to get through that one than Darksiders.
I'm sure it will.
So, now speaking of Star Wars earlier, we now have a title for episode 8, which you would have seen on the website, geekcavepodcast.com, because you all are loyal readers as
and
well as listeners.
And you smell wonderful.
And you smell wonderful. So the title is now The Last Jedi, which we saw a sneak peek of the opening crawl, and it's just the repeated line, "Oh God, Luke's going to die," over and over again. I wonder though if that's not a head fake because Jedi is already plural.
That's true.
And so there could be more. It could be okay. I doubt it, but it could be okay. Yeah. You got to have a second movie that ends sad.
Yeah.
And so what more sad way could you end the second movie than both Skywalkers?
That's true.
Or I guess Solo and Skywalker and Organa. Now all the big three gone.
That's true.
In a huge twist, it's actually C-3PO.
Technically, he is a Skywalker. He was made by Anakin.
Yeah. So, now, I thought of this joke, and then I saw it on Facebook, which just keeps proving that every time I have a good idea, somebody else has had it first, is that the titles actually make a sentence. So we get The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi. And so I've decided, all by my lonesome, and then cleared it with Darren because he's the boss. So if on Facebook, on Twitter, if you can fill out the title of the next movie in such a way as to make me laugh, we'll give you something. We've got prizes to give away. There'll be something that we can give you. So The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi from his nap, I think is the one that's actually been on Facebook quite a bit.
Yeah.
I said The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi in time for spring. You know, when he rises from his hibernation. We'll just whole slew of titles that we can go with here.
Yeah, go nuts. Have fun. Make us laugh.
Yes. So that is kind of the Oscar bits of things. Anyway, and Star Wars kind of tied into Oscars. And so we're going to move over to the Justice League movie.
Oh,
which is coming. And
well, I got excited. I thought you meant the cartoon series.
The better one.
Yeah.
So, well, I shouldn't say that. It's not out yet.
As of this moment, better one.
So Zack Snyder tells us that Superman will have a huge role in the movie. But then walked it back. You know, he's like, oh yeah, Superman has a huge role in the movie. And then walked it backward by saying, well, Superman's presence and absence will be major story points. You know, guys, I'll be honest, I'm a little bit worried that what Snyder's going to do is try to force the entire reign of the Superman Superman into this storyline into this.
No.
And we'll get like mulleted black suit Superman for a while. The mullet thing I'm fine with. I think Henry Cavill with long hair would actually be kind of hysterical, but I don't think hysterical is what we're going for.
No.
Here. Although Hank Henshaw as the villain. Although, quite honestly, Hank Henshaw as the main villain is not a bad idea.
Yeah, it could be good.
So speaking of DC and such things, Darren, you were talking to me something about a Lego movie coming.
Yeah, the Lego Batman movie, which if you saw the Lego movie, then you already know Batman was probably the best part. They totally ripped off a really good YouTube series that I saw once, but I digress. Lego Batman was the best part. So he's got his own movie, going on a personal
Darkness.
Journey to find himself.
No parents. Super rich.
Kind of makes it better.
It's due out about a week or so after this episode hits the internet, so February 10th.
So
Will
go
Arnett
see it.
As yeah, go see it. Will Arnett as Batman, Zach Galifianakis as Joker, Michael Cera as Robin. It looks like they're going with goofy Robin, and at first I was not okay with it, but the more trailers I've seen, yeah, I'm okay with it. Rosario Dawson as Batgirl, Mariah Carey as the mayor.
What?
Yep, Mayor McCaskill. So. Okay, well, the last movie Mariah Carey was in was terrible, so please don't suck.
But she was the star of that one. She's not the star of this one.
That's fair. That's fair.
You
Jenny
hope.
Slate,
I hope.
Jenny Slate is playing Harley
I plead. Quinn. I beg.
So, yeah. It looks fun. It looks like a fun movie that, you know, kind of keeps the humor from the Lego movie going. Chevy recently unveiled a Batmobile commercial that you may have seen if you watch Hulu or something like that, where Lego Batman, it's the whole, like, they bring people in for a focus test, and Lego Batman is literally the only one that lights the vehicle. It's funny. It's cute. But yeah, Lego Batman movie out in, like, a week, February 10th. Go see it.
You know, they really should have gotten, and I'm assuming, because I've not seen the movie yet, it's not out, so I can't judge Mariah Carey's performance as a mayor. But it seems like a missed opportunity to have Adam West as the mayor.
I know.
Not as Mayor Adam West. That's copyright, you know, Seth MacFarlane, whatever. But just have Adam West voice a mayor.
Just have him.
It's proven that
at
works.
At least on the city council.
At least yeah, somebody.
The only other movie news I have, a little bit of TV news. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Mockingbird might be back on the show, but they're not saying when. They're saying, well, we could bring her back, but not anytime soon. She was played by Adrienne Palicki, who was at one point going to play Wonder Woman before the pilot was released, and it ended up being terrible. And the Black Adam movie is a thing. The Rock is getting his own spinoff. Dwayne Johnson will play the Shazam villain, and now he'll have his own film because he's The Rock, and he gets to do that.
Well, when you can smell what he's cooking,
yeah,
yes.
It smells like jambalaya.
So moving from DC into Marvel, as Darren did there, into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we also get the slew of Netflix Marvel stuff. And so Iron Fist, the next in Marvel's Defenders prequels, released most of their episode titles, which is kind of a weird thing to me to release. And each seems to be inspired by some kind of martial art movie. When you have titles like Snow Gives Way and Dragon Plays with Fire. You know,
that's better than Dragon Plays with Self.
I don't know that it's actually telling us all that much, although I think it would be telling when you consider that the UK, their film classification board, has also released their ratings for these episodes. And most of them are in their, like, 13 to 15 range, which means 13 to 15-year-olds, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
One episode, episode 7, has earned an 18 rating, meaning that you should be over 18 before watching this episode. So whatever happens in episode 7 is likely going to be particularly graphic in its violence, because the UK doesn't care about boobies, but they care very deeply about blood and violence.
Okay.
Now Iron Fist is just the latest addition. The Punisher is also supposed to be releasing a season a little bit later this year as well. Daredevil 3 is going to be getting its next season. And then Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, I think they're looking into 2018 for their next seasons. I'm honestly looking a little bit more forward to Iron Fist than I was for Luke Cage, but I think that goes back to my love of like bad kung fu movies that I just grew up with. So
yeah.
Before I get into non-comic book stuff, Darren, did you have any other Marvel-ish type stuff?
Not on my radar.
Movies.
Oh yes. Oh yeah. Sorry, I just blanked for a second. So the new Logan trailer. Have you guys seen it?
Not the newest one. Not yet.
No.
Okay. See, I have kind of a weird relationship with the Wolverine movies. I liked X-Men Origins Wolverine, but I can see that it was a not very good film, especially for Deadpool. It was terrible for Deadpool. And
truth,
the movie did have its moments.
Yes.
Both good and shitty?
Yes. The Wolverine was not as good. A lot of people seem to have liked it more. I don't know why, because I thought it was terrible. It had a lot of problems. But the trailer for Logan shows us a world where the X-Men have all been killed off. It looks a lot like the comic book Old Man Logan. X-23, Wolverine's female teenage clone, is in it, and she has some incredibly badass moments. Now, they probably showed us the best parts just in the trailer, but the trailer really has me looking forward to this one, actually. It looks like it could be pretty good.
I actually heard rumor that this is supposed to be an Elseworlds.
You know, Hugh Jackman said that, but then the director came back and said, no, actually, it takes place about 5 years after Days of Future Past. So, you know, it's conflicting
stories.
So
all that fixing everything for Days of Future Past just kind of went out the window, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, it's one of those things where, if you remember, Days of Future Past had kind of like two endings. It had an ending for James McAvoy, Professor X, and their path forward to Apocalypse. And then it was really kind of like a wrap-up for the original cast and crew of the original X-Men movies. But yeah, that happy ending apparently goes right out the window.
So in a completely different and more fabulous direction, Netflix is bringing back Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And so for those who were born after 1990, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy was based on this stereotype that gay men are more refined than straight men. And so a team of five gay men would perform basically a sort of a makeover, which they called a make better, on some dude, you know, dealing with stuff from food, clothes, interior decorating, grooming, culture. They just change over this guy's life for some kind of event, you know, asking for a raise, proposing to a girlfriend, you know, having a dinner party, what have you. It was a really weird show to watch that I really liked in college. And I think I liked it in college because it was so weird and so obviously stereotyping. That it's just like, these aren't real people. This is kind of amazing. But it was a hit for Bravo for like 100 episodes. So Netflix decided, you know what? We need a little bit more of that. And so they're bringing it back with a new Fab Five to Queer Eye for the Straight Guy it up on Netflix.
Okay.
Because that's something Netflix needs more of, is reality television. which is why soon we're getting their first competitive reality show. Have you seen this?
No.
Beastmaster, hosted by Sylvester Stallone.
What?
It looks like American Ninja Warrior kind of thing, where it starts with like 100 and some odd contestants, and then we, you know, gets it down to one. It's Ninja Warrior, you know, whole bunch of obstacle courses with Sylvester Stallone. It up. So I'm sure that'll be amazing. I'll probably watch it just because, well, yeah. I think it'll be amazing.
In terms of reality TV, I've hit my peak with Canada's Worst Driver.
That is kind of amazing.
Nothing will top that. Nothing is better than that.
Canada's Worst Handyman is pretty good, too.
Well, I've not seen that one.
Well, so. I'm just letting you know.
But
it's out there.
Notice how they're both Canadian.
Yes. Canada's got quite a few really great TV shows. Actually, there's an Australian show on Netflix now called Glitch, which is a remake of a French show that was then remade in America. And it's one of those shows that it always leaves you with more questions than answers kind of thing. But it's only 6 episodes long, and it's a very interesting take on the zombie mythos. Huh. It's like you have these people coming back from the dead, but they're coming back at the prime of their life, and they're not, you know,
yeah,
kind of zombies. So it's an interesting twist.
Okay.
So in the realm of things I never thought that I would say, The Devil Wears Prada is being made into a Broadway musical from Elton John and Paul Rudnick. I don't know why either.
I didn't know Elton John was involved in it. That somehow makes it a little bit better.
Uh-huh.
Not by much.
Yeah.
But okay.
So the last time that we recorded, we reported on Carrie Fisher being taken into intensive care with a heart attack. And since then, she has died. Well,
actually, I think we may have cut that out. By the time it got to air, she had already passed away. So it was like, that's just rubbing salt in the wound. So we're just going to...
Makes sense.
Yeah. So disregard what Chad just said.
I will strike that from the record.
So 2017 is on track to being just as dangerous for famous people as 2016 was. And so we're recording on the 28th day of January. And
it is approximately 11:05 a.m.
and not in the order of deceased, Mike Connors, who played Mannix, has died. As has Mary Tyler Moore, William Blatty, who is the author of The Exorcist, who did comedy before he did The Exorcist, and then after The Exorcist, no one would buy his comedy. So, go figure. Barbara Hale, who is on Perry Mason, Mary Webster, who is on Father's Knows Best, and John Hurt, who is the war doctor.
Among other things, but yes.
Among lots of other things.
Yeah.
He was also the guy who had the initial chest-bursting scene in both Alien and Spaceballs.
Oh, no. Not again.
So, way to go, 2017. Just keep on knocking us down. I don't know how many more we're going to get on the unsubscribe list.
Is that what we're calling it now?
Being pithy with death.
I mean, there are still like 3 days left in January, so it's...
Don't remind me. Well, from one unpleasant...
Who knows? Betty White and Michael Caine could be on a bus ride and then, well...
Oh. So, from unpleasant to unpleasant, over our time on The Cave, we have discussed a lot of unpleasant topics. We try to keep things light. We try to, you know, be a little bit more positive on things. But, I mean, we've talked about everything from Twitter trolls to racism, homophobia, a few other topics, things that they apply within our particular wheelhouses.
Yeah.
You know, we've dealt with the sexism in the comics industry a number of times. Gaming, that seems to have become its, you know, only issue is the sexism. And so now we get to run into that with our the movie segment as well. Specifically, in the stunt woman industry. Now, as long as there have been stunt men, there's been had to be stunt women.
Yeah.
To a point. And the rules that are in place is that you have to do some kind of reasonable search for someone who is the same sex and race and age as the actor that's being duplicated. But the rules for it are so lax that you can just kind of look at a list on a piece of paper and be like, oh, nobody matches that. Did my due diligence. Okay, let's get John back in here. Put him in a wig and blackface, and he can do it. And so there is a much stronger push now from the one of the stunt women who was active during the original Charlie's Angels TV show, who's been meeting with SAG-AFTRA to make these restrictions, to make these procedures a lot more strict so that it's not just going to whoever. And when you consider that something like 2/3 of stunt women have reported being harassed or bullied on the set of the show that they're working on, it's like, I don't know why it bothers me so much more than some of the other things, but I'll be keeping an eye on it. Hopefully I'll have good news about it in the coming months. I mean, come on, guys. This ain't the 50s.
You know? One thing we as part of the geek culture need to remember is the stuff we enjoy, comics, movies, video games, whatever your thing is, uh-huh. is meant to kind of distract us from the shit that goes on in the real world.
Mm.
We need to remember that the making of this stuff is part of the real world, and there are problems within these systems that do need to be fixed, along with everything else.
So there are lots of options, filmmakers. You don't have to keep hiring the white guy. I mean, it's good for the white guy that he's got some jobs, but you know there are other people that could use jobs too. Don't be a jerk, and pay them what they're supposed to earn.
Yes.
So that is what I have for movies, except for a particular review. So, do either of you have anything last minute to add?
I'm good.
Chant.
And now it's time for Chad Savage's random movie review.
So, as I said last month, I'm going to be looking into the American Film Institute's top 100 list, things that I haven't seen before. And so North by Northwest is what it is this month. And it's number 55 on the American Film Institute's top 100. It is one of Hitchcock's better known films, and it stars Eva Marie Saint and Cary Grant in his terrifying otherworldly hands. The movie holds a 100% rating on IMDb, and the question, of course, to ask is why? You know, that not being mean, but anything that has a 100% rating, immediately ask the question, why? Why is there no imperfection to this? And the answer, as best as I can put it, is because it was really well done and was doing things before anyone else did it. So it kind of set the standard for doing things that nobody had done before. So North by Northwest is a spy thriller with comedy. You know, that hadn't been done before. I mean, it predates the James Bond Casino Royale by nearly a decade, the one with David Niven.
Yeah, the silly one.
Uh-huh. And was still a good 4 years before even the first Bond film, Dr. No, which would both take their inspiration from North by Northwest, with the colorful locations, kind of the odd angles for some of the shots, the lighthearted, unruffable kind of secret agent bit, which was almost a parody of itself.
Yeah.
So the story, and I'm just going to use the actors' names because it's easier, is that Cary Grant is mistaken for a spy. You know, after, and then because he's mistaken for a spy, he's kidnapped. Now, in the movie, he's just an advertising agent. And so he gets kidnapped, and he's nearly killed, and then no one believes him, which leads to Grant then searching for the man everyone seems to think he is. And the twist, which I'm just going to give you because, you know, people still watch Unbreakable even though they know what the twist is. The twist is that the man that everyone seems to think that Cary Grant is doesn't actually exist in the first place. It's a fiction created by the spy agency, the American spy agency, to keep a bad guy off the trail of a real agent. So it's like, okay, we have a real agent who's in place, who's undercover, but we need to somehow keep the heat off of that person. And so we're going to create a completely separate fake agent who's just really bad at his job that he can get that, but can't get caught. And so they do that. And despite knowing this, you know, they eventually know this. The villains still work to kill this hero. They still work to kill him over and over again. In one of the most famous and risky scenes from the movie, Grant is attacked by a crop duster. For those of you who live in urban areas, a crop duster is typically an airplane that will dust crops. That is, it will release a pesticide on top of corn, beans, wheat from the air.
A small airplane, not a, like a
biplane, something that only travels like 50, 60 miles an hour.
Holds like two people.
It is not, as you might think, when you walk through a crowd of people and fart silently, which is the other version of crop dusting.
That is the more urban form.
And what I mean when I say that it's risky is that, first off, the scene is preceded by like 6 minutes of silence, where it's just this dude waiting by the side of the road to meet somebody. And, you know, looking around and seeing traffic. He's in the middle of a bunch of cornfields, so the traffic is like a car, and then wait another minute, and then another car. And then somebody gets out, and he goes up and says like three lines to the guy, and then the guy gets on a bus and goes away, and it's still silent. It's also in that scene, it's spoofing the typical spy assassination attempt. You know, so many of the spy movies that time, you'd be in some kind of dark alley and it'd be raining, you know. And here, it's the middle of the bloody afternoon. Bright sun, shining sky. And it's not some nefarious character with a silenced pistol or a garrote wire. He's flying a biplane. You know, just...
That was a good plane.
Thank you. One of the strengths of the movie is that the film is how each scene builds on the last. So missing anything, you know, from the beginning, the middle, is going to make the whole movie almost lead to confusion. As was evidenced when Justin's spouse, she came in 20 minutes in, and already by that point, it's like, I can't explain what's going on in this movie right now without pausing and giving you, you know, 18 minutes of of background, which is why you're not getting a huge amount even here. Now, in the realm of Hitchcock, it's classic Hitchcock. I mean, the film utilizes the MacGuffin, which doesn't show up until about 2/3 through the movie, a little microfilm. Then there's also the cameo. Hitchcock almost always had a cameo. He's the dude that misses the bus.
He is the Stanley of his day.
Yeah. We get the audience's voyeur, which is it's the first part of like first person video games where you are the character.
Mm-hmm.
It does that, especially when the guy is driving drunk down a hill. And so you get the scenes, the headlights and the traffic and so forth going down the hill. And of course, the main character having issues with his mother, which happens in a lot more Hitchcock films than seems reasonable. So,
having never met Mrs. Hitchcock, I don't know.
Now, for those raised on movies since 1997, so you watched Titanic, you know, was your first real foray into watching movies. This is probably going to be your best bet for watching an older movie, especially an older Hitchcock movie, because as far as pacing, this one is lightning fast by the standards of his stuff.
Yeah.
But on the other end, it's like insanely slow compared to what we've seen now. You know, if you watched any of the latest Bond movies, you notice that they're basically a set of action pieces, set pieces, you know, with a little bit of exposition in the middle. This is a whole lot of exposition with a little bit of action interspersed in between. So ultimately this one's going to get a, you know, a watch with friends for me. Watch with friends for me. It's worth seeing. But the current way that we have of watching movies, it makes it a little too slow to really enjoy and appreciate Solo. You know, you have to really be into it and want to see it.
Yeah, unless you're just like a film buff and that's what you do in your spare time. You watch movies of all sorts.
So I think there are better Hitchcock movies out there. I mean, Vertigo to me is better. Psycho is beyond anything that I think that Hitchcock did before or since. But it's probably not quite as accessible as this one. And so see this one with friends. I'm sure that as I go through this year, they'll get funnier. The reviews, that is, because I'll get a little jaded with these quote unquote classic movies. That it's like, if you asked me to review The Great Gatsby, I'm sure that there would be fun rants in and among what's said there, but it's Hitchcock, and it's Hitchcock doing what he does really, really well. So watch it with friends, enjoy it. It's in color, so you'll have fewer problems with people going, "Oh,
yeah." That would be my wife.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of folks. I had a guy once walk out of seeing Young Frankenstein because it was in black and white.
Oh.
Said poor guy never knew what he missed. So
poor bastard.
Yep, poor bastard. I'm sure he's very happy wherever he is in a brightly colored world.
You don't talk to him anymore, do you?
I don't.
You don't need that kind of negativity in your life.
Yeah, that's like somebody saying it's too cold for ice cream. I don't need that person. So that's what I got. We look forward to seeing you next time.
Yeah.
Through the old microphone.
Yeah. And don't forget about the contest that Chad mentioned. If you have to, go back to about 6 minutes in and listen to it again. Basically, find a way to make us laugh by forming a sentence. The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi, blank. And you'll win a prize. We don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, finish the sentence, win a prize. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up.
All right. Anybody got anything else? Nope. All right.
Nope.
For Chad, for Kent, for Justin, I'm Darren. Thanks a lot for listening, and be sure to like us, comment, subscribe, do whatever, depending on how you accessed this podcast. And don't forget to give our sponsors a shout-out as well, GameStop, BuzzTime, and Shirtosaurus. We'll see you guys in about a month. Remember, everyone is a geek for something.